Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Well, we're winding down season six, and what a season it has been. Here's what we have coming up. It looks like we will run a few more episodes up until December 17th, which will be our season six finale. For the listeners that don't know, I take a recording and interview break from the show over the holidays, and this generally extends into the first half of January, usually about a month or so. This sabbatical allows me to spiritually recharge and live for a few weeks with no weekly podcast deadlines, and it has proven to be really, really great for my spiritual well-being and my health. I will be coming back to start season seven in or around President Trump's inauguration. So the first episode of season seven will drop either Tuesday, January 14th or Tuesday, January 21st, depending on what is happening in the world. Today's interview is a good one. It got put in the hopper a little longer than usual, so I want to thank David for his patience. It is a far-reaching interview. We touch on the spiritual war, drug addiction, the occult, child exploitation, pornography as a weapon, and Donald Trump as our bull in the china shop. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is David Leon. David is a digital creator, speaker, and social media influencer. He has been an important voice in the walkaway movement, former Democrats who have left the left, as well as an outspoken member of Gays Against Groomers, gays who are showing the insanity behind all this transgenderism and grooming of our kids. Here is my interview with David Leon. All right, I am here with David Kitzak. Walk away, an American, David Kitzak. David, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you know, I got connected to you from my wife, who was at a fundraiser. I'd been wanting to have on somebody from Gays Against Groomers, because I feel like that's a really important work and important voice in the transgender kind of conflict that's going on right now. And she had mentioned that she listened to you talk and she was just like really impressed. He's just fantastic. You should get him. He's involved in a million things, but I know he's involved with Gays Against Groomers. So I reached out and luckily we found a little wrinkle in our schedule. I know you're super busy, but I guess just to start off with, just give us a little bit of a background. Like, David, where'd you grow up? Where are you from? How many people are in your family? And kind of what kinds of work have you done, you know, over your adult life?
Yeah. So like you said, my name is David. I go by David Leon. I don't really use my last name too much because the Democrats put out that press release about me earlier this year using my full name, essentially doxing me. Yeah. So I'm David Leon. I'm a first generation Russian immigrant. My parents were refugees from the Soviet Union. They left in 89, a little bit before the wall came down, or right after the wall came down and before the Soviet Union officially dissolved. Mm. So they came here as refugees fleeing religious persecution. So our family was very persecuted for being Christian. Not just Christian, but Baptist. And so Baptist was very considered kind of anti-authoritarian in the USSR. The Orthodox Church was already infiltrated by the KGB. So anybody that was a Baptist was considered a dissident. And, you know, communists very much so frown on any sort of religion or God or any higher power over the government. Mm. So that's kind of always informed me growing up. I was raised very religious, and then I broke away from my faith and went on my own journey. I read a bunch of atheist literature, and I started reading a lot of Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens. And when there was this big, essentially, like, YouTube atheism boom in like 2005, 2006, 2007. And I got really caught up in that for sure. Kind of became a Marxist at the end of my high school. And was reading people like Saul Alinsky, and not in a critical way, in a way of like trying to learn from him.
Right.
And so then I, when I was, as soon as I turned, actually like a month before I turned 18, I really wanted to get out. I grew up in Mill Creek. I was born in West Seattle. Then my family moved up to Everett and then Lake Stevens. And then most of my life was spent in Lake Stevens and Mill Creek.
Okay.
And when I really wanted to get out of the burbs, obviously, you know, I was very like artistic and kind of creative as a child. I wanted to either be like a hairstylist or a makeup artist or a fashion designer or something like that, which is pretty typical of a young gay boy. But so then I moved to Capitol Hill, Seattle, because that was the gayborhood and that's where you go. And I got a job downtown. And then that's when I was first exposed to fentanyl. Which was around 2008, 2009. And it was kind of like a really expensive, chic party drug that only like the East Siders were doing and like people that came from like golf course communities because it was so expensive. And it was originally cut with stevia, the sugar substitute.
Yeah.
So it was sweet. It could have been, you could smoke it, snort it, shoot it, or eat it anyway. And it just would smell like sugar. So like people are like, oh, this isn't heroin. This isn't, you know, one of those gross junky drugs. It's only 10 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine.
So, it started off as like a chic designer drug then. I didn't know that.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Really? This is what's so scary. I'll tell you this, Tony, when I found out, because I still counsel people that are dealing with addiction now. Mm-hmm. When I found out how much they pay now, so I would have to pay between $80 to let's say $120 for like a gram, mm-hmm. which would last you anywhere from like a day to half a day, depending how much of a user you were. Mm-hmm. And fentanyl goes in and out of your system very quick. It's a fast-acting opiate. This is why people nod off. It's what they use to put you down for surgery. Mm-hmm. So that's why you're literally seeing people out on the street doubled over, sleeping in a standing position.
Yeah.
So now what I would used to pay between $80 to $100 for, people are paying $3 to $5 for now. Wow. And it's in pill form. It's being mass produced in China and coming over the border through the cartel. It's become ubiquitous. It is everywhere. And I'm frankly, this is a little dark for me to say, but I'm shocked that it's not worse than it is now for how cheap it is and for how bad the economy is. Because you're telling me somebody can spend $5 and maybe buy a banana and a bottle of water at the grocery store now for $5, or they can escape their entire life for 24 hours with one pill. That's an easy choice for someone struggling with addiction, you know? Yeah,
absolutely.
So that's really, really scary to me. So after I basically was in my kind of communist druggy user phase and party, all that, I maintained a full-time job, though, full-time social life, and nobody knew that I was such a raging functioning addict. But if I didn't use for a few hours, I would start getting extremely sick. So I was a full-blown like junkie, but I was selling designer bags to rich people at Barney's New York, you know? And maintaining, and all of my money went to clothes and drugs. So then a little bit, I'll try to make this a little shorter, sorry, but...
No, you're good.
Then what basically broke me away from addiction is in 2013, I moved to Minnesota for a year for work. The job ended up falling through. It was a total crapshoot, but changing my... I was already getting off of drugs at the time. I was actually off of fentanyl completely for like a month before I moved. And then... like you do when you're addicted and you have your toxic like monkey brain speaking to you. I was like, this is my last time. I'm moving tomorrow. I'm going to get drugs. I'm going to get high one last time. So literally the night before I move, I go get fentanyl and I get so high. I essentially overdose without like dying or overdosing. Mm-hmm. And I fall asleep completely sitting up in my bedroom holding a piece of foil. And that's what my mom walks into in the morning. God. So it was... It was horrible. So like the way I left was awful. It was like this huge fight. And then I left, you know, halfway across the country. And then I got off of it. And at that same time, I was very much so getting into the occult. And I read tarot. I did numerology, astrology. I was really just into like the esoteric world. I kind of started breaking away from full-blown atheism and naturalism. I started believing in slightly more metaphysical things. And
yeah.
That really came through studying Kabbalah, to be honest. And I studied Kabbalah for years, and the way they explained God through the language of numbers made a lot of sense to me in my logical brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened up the idea, then the concept again of like a God and a higher power and all of that. And then the truth of the matter is, I started getting, the longer and longer you study Kabbalah, it gets much more esoteric and darker. Then it goes into angel languages, angel numbers, demon conjuring. There's a lot of stuff that sure. that gets very dark. And I realized all of the different schools of thoughts and cults and religions that have borrowed from Kabbalah, like Freemasonry, Mormonism, a lot of things stem. A lot of Western mysticism all comes from Kabbalah and Babylonian magic, essentially. So I realized that there are a lot of people that believe in this stuff, and a lot of very powerful, intelligent people, people that run the world, believe in some really dark things. And it's almost like I started believing in the devil again before I believed in God, because I realized that, wow, the devil is so real. And then that means God has to exist. Like, there is such evil in the world. His opposite exists for sure. So it's almost like, it's not that I believed in the devil first. It's that I realized that I realized that darkness exists, like evil truly, truly exists on this world, and that we don't live in just a natural world. And that kind of brought me back to my original faith in a different way.
It was really the battle, and you can frame the battle however you want. You could say it's biblical, or you could say it's, you know, it's an ancient Babylonian religion with child sacrifice. I mean, there is just all these gruesome things that once you start, sounds like you've been really down the rabbit hole of some esoteric stuff. I also have, not as much on Kabbalah as some of the other ancient rabbit holes, but you start to realize that there is these kind of, there's these two energies that are happening. They're inside of us, but they're also, we see them out in the world. So I heard you talking about the Balenciaga saga, right?
Yeah.
I cannot believe how just out front, I mean, we've got the P. Diddy thing lurking. We have all these different things that are going on. When I was younger, and maybe you can also speak to this, when I was younger, it seemed like there was wars and conflict. And, you know, at that time I was a liberal, I was a Kennedy liberal. So I was like, you know, let's live and let live. Let's, you know, let's give everybody their choice. And, you know, I was an anti-religion at that point, because I thought that was a really rigid way to see these universal principles. But now, the last, say, 5 to 10 years, the Luciferian imagery of blood sacrifice, over-sexualized imagery, targeting children, you have to be pretty dense to not see what's going on. Like, you have to really put your head in the sand and say, I don't know what these people are talking about, because it is everywhere. And if you're not going to stand up and pick a side, it seems like everything that's going on, it's begging each person to say, which side do you want to stand on? Because if you're going to stick your head in the sand, that's being useful for the dark side, because they're hoping people don't stand up and get their voices activated, speak from the heart, speak for the children, speak for humanity. So there's this kind of, and I saw massive compliance to authority, which mortified me during COVID. Yeah. I was like, what in the fuck are these people doing? Like, but now I see it's part of this larger agenda of, can we create enough fear of standing up and saying, that's not right. And we'll get into the transgender stuff and the gays against groomers here in just a second. But I guess I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about you know, to me, it seems like everything's gotten accelerated, right?
Yes.
In the last 10 years. What are you seeing with that?
1,000%. I agree. It has been accelerating. There is, so like the whole principle of the occult is symbology, and occult means like secret wisdom and secret knowledge. So there is an entire world. The world of symbols is like another dimension, really. It's like the double meanings that come with everything. And you realize when how densely packed the symbology is everywhere, then it starts to make sense, and you realize that we're not just living in a natural world. We're living in a world, we're not just existing in this material dimension. There is something else. And then it gave me pause, because if everyone that is educated and running the world really is wanting to push you into non-belief, they don't want you to believe in God. They want you to just believe in yourself. You're just a robot made out of flesh. They don't want you to believe in anything like that, but they themselves do. They themselves do believe in a spiritual world. They themselves do believe in alternate dimensions in the most like basic way, like metaphysics and stuff, you know?
Sure.
They believe in all that stuff. So why are they trying to keep us so low and de-elevated from all of this? It's because there is darkness there, and there is an agenda, and it's just unsettling when you know that, like, I mean, it's, you know, some people will probably roll their eyes at this, but one of my biggest like red pills or kind of like awakening moments was seeing the footage from the Bohemian Grove and seeing like people that run the world do rituals and do like essentially incantations around a burning effigy. Like, what the hell is going on? You know? So it's like, what in God's name are these people that go to the most elite institutions, have been groomed since childhood to run the world? Why are they all interconnected? And the thing that connects them essentially is, well, the occult is the overall umbrella. But the thing that I made a video about this like over a year ago, saying the thing I've noticed the most when it comes to child exploitation in the last few years is like, look at the stories. It's Epstein's private plane, his private island, Balenciaga, Demna, Adidas, all of these major fashion brands. We have been subconsciously programmed to equate child exploitation of the worst kind with the elite and with elitism. And the metaphor that I bring, or the analogy that I bring, is that it's become so proliferated everywhere that it's kind of like high fashion in the couture shows in Paris, right? When regular people see it, they're like, that's so weird. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But these people that know so much more than me are into it. So maybe there's something there. It doesn't even normalize it. It glamorizes child abuse and child exploitation. It makes it like the last, it makes it almost like the last kind of marker of like your tax bracket, or like how much wealth you have. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It becomes almost like, what can you have now that you have so much power and money? You can have anything. Yeah. And then people start reaching for the taboos. And pornography has a huge, huge role in that. Mm. Pornography is one of the most toxic weapons that's been waged against this country and around the world ever. I mean, they had that expose with the man from MindGeek, who is the parent company of Pornhub, talking about how if their computers notice that there's a heterosexual man going on their website every day with addictive patterns showing, they will start showing him more and more dark, more and more taboo things. And he said it's specifically what they've been doing now as a form of diversity, equity, and inclusion, is that they're pushing trans porn into straight men's feeds after they've been watching straight porn for a while and they're showing addictive patterns. He says they start introducing them to trans porn to open their mind a little bit. And it's like, and it works too, because like, coming from someone who has dealt with a lot of addiction in my life, drug, like porn is a drug too. Like,
sure,
you can absolutely recognize that. It fires off all of those same neurons in your brain. And yet we're not treating it the same way. And we're like proliferating it and making it, you know, more and more normalized and popular. I mean, regular people are advertising their pornographic OnlyFans accounts on TikTok, which is an app for 13-year-olds, 13 plus. And they're doing the same thing on Instagram. I mean, I got a violation. I lost my account because my original TikTok account, when I had like 14,000 followers and my video was going viral at the time, it was at 2.3 million views, getting about 150,000 views every day. And my account gets fully deleted. No recompense, nothing. I can't do anything, no explanation. But one of my violations was there was some OnlyFans thought, which is THOT, that hoe over there, on TikTok in like a bikini, simulating oral sex on like a on a popsicle or a cucumber. I couldn't remember. It was a little jarring. Simulating oral sex and saying, you know, link in bio, go find my link. I left a trash can emoji on her comment. Like, this is trashy. Kids are on this app. And I get a violation for that. I get a strike on my account. And then after I post my next video, my video goes viral. They fully delete my account. So there is an agenda. They want to sexualize people at as youngest age as possible. They want people, and we're going into the trans thing. They want, like, there is nothing better for Big Pharma than to have a child medicalized at the earliest possible age, because A, there are going to be patients for life, and B, there'll be more and more complications the earlier you start. So then there's more medications and treatments that will be necessary. So, well, it's like this whole dark web.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. And, you know, I wanted to distinguish a little bit, because I think when the LGBTQ plus, as that was developing, right? Like, I grew up as a Kennedy liberal. So, and I lived in Seattle, New York City. I always had lots of gay friends and lesbian friends. Just by my natural, you know, going about my life, working, having clients, all this stuff. And, you know, it was that was all, you know, part of having an open mind, part of accepting and loving people for where they're at. I recognized early, look, people, have a particular sexual orientation, that is natural to them. And, but something happened. All of a sudden the trans thing arrived, and, you know, and at the beginning it was hard to see because they were including it with LGBTQ, you know, that it seemed like, oh, here is, and it's how they marketed it too. They kind of said, this is an extension of gay rights. And if you don't accept trans, then you're not only a transphobic person, you're a homophobe, you're a bigot, you're a racist. They had this whole litany of things that they were going to call you, that they were ready to shout you down if you even had a question of, like, should we be including these hypersexualized books and stuff at the libraries for second graders? Is this really appropriate? Why are we not teaching them basics? Why are they getting all this? And after talking to some people, like at the beginning, I'm like, I have no idea what this is about, really. This is just so weird that they're pushing this. And I watched over on, you live here, so you know, over on Vashon Island, their high school, I want to say like 60% of the people are trans, are transitioning. Like, their whole high school, it's cool to trans. So all the, you know, they all want to be cool. They're young, you know. They're young, insecure teenagers. Yeah. And so they're like, the cool crowd is all transitioning. And when I talked to my friend, Mark McDonald, I said this, and he goes, trans rights, it is crap. It has nothing to do with gay rights. They are like a leech on the back of gay and lesbian, you know, trying to suck the life out of that movement and making it all about them. He was really clear, like, no, this is mental illness, and they've buddied up to the gay and lesbian community and basically said, let me ride with you, and hopefully you won't get sick of me and kick me out of the car, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there's basically, I watched this, I always forget her name, and I hate that I do. I want to say it's like Judith something, but I think I might be wrong. But she's this psychologist or doctor, sex specialist. And she says, before this entire insanity of self-ID, and that's been the real big thing, is that you don't even have to show any steps of transition. Your self-identification is enough to literally change reality around you. That's it. And everyone has to replicate that. But she says you could essentially, everyone in psychology used to divide transsexuals, quote unquote, into two groups. There's the AGPs, the autogynephiles. So these will, and they're very different in their experience too. So the autogynephiles get sexually aroused by the thought of being viewed as a woman, wearing women's clothes. It's a fetish. This usually happens much later in life. They've usually lived in completely heterosexual life. A lot of them have had kids.
These are the old cross-dressers, basically, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They're the old cross-dressers. They've had kids. They're divorced. They're retired. They're usually actually pretty financially stable. So then they can afford to start doing all of these things with themselves. And there's the autogynephiles. Then there's the other side, which is... people that have felt gender dysphoria or some form of that since childhood. They've always, you know, related more with the opposite sex. They've had same sex attraction since they were young, all of these things. And then they are the ones that will try their very hardest to actually transition, look as much like the opposite sex as possible. They're usually not as invasive into women's spaces because half the time they're already accepted in there because people can't really tell, right?
Right. Yeah.
So in the way to decide, or like the way to view it in your mind to see like what category to put the person in. And then we have to add a third category of the trenders, the trans trenders, which are just searching for identity. Just like you said, a lot of young people, they're confused, they're misinformed, they're misled. But the easiest way to dissect the two is if you were to force them to detransition, would they go back to living as a gay person or a straight man, right? A gay man or a straight man. Right. And if they say they'd go back as a straight man, that is a fetish. That is a way for them to get closer to other women. They are the ones that are the most pushy for getting into women's spaces because that's a part of the fantasy. They want spaces that they were never allowed in. They want to be in the spaces they fantasized about being in since they were teenagers, right?
In the women's locker rooms. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the locker rooms, the bathrooms, all of that. So it's a complete sexual fetish. And they're the ones that will most blatantly look. I mean, I don't know if you know that Lily Tino, a trans influencer, the one that will like go to Disneyland and talk about the surgeries they're getting and like show it with cake pops and popsicles and say like, I'm getting my, you know, banana split turned into a sundae or whatever. There's like literally kids around. They're also kind of famous for going to restaurants. And if anyone says, thank you, sir, or something, they're like, it's ma'am. I'm a girl, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I'm jealous of Lily Tino's jawline. That jawline could cut glass. Okay. it's a wonderful masculine jawline. I am jealous of it. But in no way does that read feminine by any means.
Do you think, David, that it's, you know, since we touched on the dark occult, and we've touched on globalists and the deep state and all this stuff, do you think that the transgender thing, because it seemed to come out of nowhere and it just exploded? Do you think it's part of a larger like eugenics, you know, population reduction? Because these people, if you're going to have a bunch of surgeries and you're taking hormone blockers and stuff, chances are nature is going to say, no kids for you. Do you think it's part of like a whole generation that's going to be so fucked up and confused and on and pharmaceuticals that do God knows what, that you're going to see population plummet because it's just like, well, we took care of that generation. They're not having kids except for, you know, a few conservatives in the red states somewhere. Right.
Right. And it's that I think there's it's like a multi-pronged thing. So one of the biggest things is actually what you mentioned prior was the gay rights movement. Right. Uh-huh. That was huge. That was massive. It was so well funded. The Human Rights Campaign was born out of that. Mm-hmm. All of these huge organizations that were have all of these jobs and infrastructure and power and donations, and then they get what they want. So what do? Just say, okay, we won, let's relax? No, they're going to use all of that infrastructure, all of that power, all of that money for the next cause that they have, because otherwise they are irrelevant and they don't have a job anymore, right? You know? So they just alchemized all of that energy into this new, their new sacred cow, the new thing that everyone must bow to. And it's even more egregious than before. Right. And the craziest thing about it is there is so much homophobia rooted in a lot of the trans movement. Because if you look at Iran, you can't be openly gay in Iran. You can transition and the government will pay you to transition because it's much more jarring to the culture to see two men kiss than to see something that looks like a woman kiss a man, right? Mm. And plus, half the time they're in burqas anyway, so you can't tell.
Yeah.
So
I'm actually surprised that there is transitioning in Iran, actually. Oh, that shocks me.
Government funded transition. Yes, there is deep, deep homophobia inlaid into the trans movement. There are many parents who won't want gay children and they'd rather have a trans child, especially because of how popular it is now and how many social credit points you get for it and how now you're impervious to any criticism and nobody can say anything about you and now you're just a hero because you're raising a beautiful, brave trans child. I mean, there was that video that's going viral now that made me want to throw up. It's this man who's raising his son as a girl. He's 10 years old, this boy, fully dressed as a girl, wearing a little crop top and skirt, full belly showing, everything. Mm-hmm. And the dad is like, oh, we're so excited. My daughter is going on her first date today as a 10-year-old.
God.
And it's a little boy wearing a skirt with his hair all grown out. And he looks like a girl because he's prepubescent. He's 10 years old. Of course he looks like a girl. Like, sure. That's normal. Like, they don't, you haven't got your secondary sex characteristics yet.
Did you see the one? I saw one recently and I couldn't see, it didn't say where in the country it was, but it was a whole middle school class of like 20 kids that were all non-binary. And so they all had, you know, colorful hair and masks on, and they were all talking about how magical it was. And their pronouns were, you know, they, them, or whatever the pronouns were for them. And it was the entire class. There wasn't one single, you know, kid that was like, I don't really want to go along.
It's a social contagion. It's a social contagion.
Well, and one of the things I wanted to ask you too is like, what, you know, you were a liberal, like I think most gay men, I think you start as a liberal, right? Because it's like, okay, that's my tribe over there. The rainbow flag is, I identify, you know, there's going to be more people like that here than there will be on the conservative side. And maybe you have maybe you think conservatives just a bunch of white Christians or whatever. So you're like, okay, that's not me. I'm going this way. But I started noticing, you know, I always felt like being a liberal when I was younger, it was kind of like a fuck you a little bit to the establishment. Like, I'm not going along with your rigid notions of right and wrong and what it is to be a man or whatever. But it became, over time, as we got, you know, 15, 10 years ago, certainly 5 years ago, all of a sudden, I was like, the most intolerant group is the radical left. Like, there is no way to be anything other than what they are saying, or you're going to get canceled. I mean, I got canceled off of Twitter because I was, you know, I was asking, are the mRNA vaccines going to be safe? You know, that got me in the crosshairs. I was just asking, but I was mouthy about a lot of the stuff that you and I are talking about as well, if I'm honest. So I was starting to be more of a contrarian, and it wasn't welcomed on the left. They're like, get out of our silo, you crazy racist, homophobe, transphobic person. Literally no room to have any kind of opinions that are different from the changing opinions, you know, that now you've got to be pro-trans. Now you got to be pro-Marxist in education. Now, you know, you're a hater if you question the curriculum in public education. What a hater. He doesn't like the teachers. Like, you literally can't ask questions about what the left is doing, or you're like under the bus for you. So I guess I just wanted to give you a chance. Like, when did it kind of turn for you when you were like, wait a minute, I can't breathe over here with these guys.
It probably happened, I know it was around 2012. So around the Tea Party time. Obama was the first president I ever voted for, you know, and I was in Capitol Hill during the election. It was everybody was in the street. I'd never seen anything like it. It was like Mardi Gras times 10. We were all like, we have cured racism. We are a new country. Like, this is it, blah, blah, blah. you know, because it was a 2008 Obama was completely different than 2012 Obama. 2008 Obama was there is no red America, there is no blue America, there is only there's only the United States of America. You know, he was all about bringing people together, blah, blah, blah. Yes, we can.
Yeah, yeah.
2012, after he screwed the last 4 years, he realized he can't run on that same message. In 2012, he built what he called the Rainbow Coalition, which was everybody except for white, Christian, straight males, essentially. Yep. It was get women. It was get black people. It was get everybody, every minority, and build a majority coalition with that. Mm-hmm. And he was successful with that. And that's when they started weaponizing identity politics to such a degree.
Yep.
And that's when I got completely disgusted by it. Because like you said, it went from being, you know, do your own thing, like don't be involved in other people's stuff. We just want to live our own life, yep, blah, 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 to you have to vote this way. You have to think this way because you are a gay man, because your parents were immigrants, because X, Y, Z, like you have to think this way, you know? And that I've been a contrarian since I was a kid. So I would argue with my Sunday school teacher. I argued with my science teacher in seventh grade because I was like a super creationist at the time. Yeah. I argued with everybody. I was an Al Gore supporter in the fifth grade, okay? So I would argue with my neighbor about Bush, and I was very big on Gore in the fifth grade. As a lot of people are when their brain hasn't developed. But
of course.
And then just started arguing and being the same contrarian I've always been, and then just getting the most insane pushback on that. And then when I started getting more into learning about my own family's history, about the persecution of Christians during communist regimes, and then noticing all these parallels, how it was so uncool to be a Christian. Like, it's so embarrassing to be a Christian, especially when I was growing up. Like, it was just like, oh, you believe in, you know, the flying spaghetti monster, what Richard Dawkins used to say. Or you believe in the sky daddy. Are you going to go talk to your sky daddy? Like, all of that, which is so ironic because most atheists that I've encountered, they don't talk. They don't live their life as if God doesn't exist. They live their life as if God exists and they hate him for it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's juvenile, and it's the ultimate daddy issues is to rebel from your heavenly father. So that, to remove from that, it's like, call it sky daddy all you want, but you're actually completely reacting to all of your inlaid traumas and all of your inlaid presuppositions about things and all of your preconceived notions. And you think you're being really open-minded, but really you're not, because you were raised in a very toxic anti-Christian, anti-God culture. So then it's like, it's the natural path to rebel from that. But
I like the daddy issue thing that you brought up, because I think that's really accurate, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's true. Like, and that's one of the things that unites almost everybody on the left, and a lot of people that are like, not just, there's plenty of people I know that are atheist in a way or agnostic in a way, that it's not, it doesn't come from like this crazy emotional space. Like maybe they just don't have the faith for it. And I can understand that. Like that's respectable. But these like brats, you know, who I'm talking about, that are just like so eager to make anyone that's slightly on the right look stupid, or make anybody that believes in God look ignorant. Like there's this whole devious, it's Luciferian is what it is. It's about like sneakily pointing out hypocrisies that are everywhere. And that's like the number one criticism of Christians, that they're hypocrites. It's like, yes, I am a hypocrite. We all admit that we're hypocrites. Like nobody lived a perfect life but one person in my belief, right? So it's like, I'm not saying that I'm perfect. If anything, I'm saying I'm so flawed that I want a relationship with my creator. That's the entire premise of it. I'm not saying I'm above or better than anybody, quite the opposite. So that's what I feel like they will refuse to understand. And they'll have these like, you know, they just rebel from authority figures. It's daddy issues. It boils down to that a lot of the time.
What do you think is going to happen before we talk just a bit about the initiatives on the state level, which is getting down to a little more micro and state? How are you feeling right now? We're in a weird spot, man. Everybody I know, myself included, everybody's really exhausted. I think the people that have stood up and voiced and added their voices to the narrative war on the pro-humanity, pro-God side, pro-light, however you want to describe it, even they're tired. You know, and it feels like the election is it's not a finish line, but it feels like a place where we're going to know a little bit more about what's going on and where we're at and who's running.
Yeah.
You know, like did we win? Is the deep state really ramping up? Did it get taken down a notch? Is you know what I mean? And
yeah.
there's a lot of people that just don't like Donald Trump on both sides. But yes. One of the things is he is an important narrative warrior for the country. And I guess I just wanted to ask you, like, are you, you know, I talked to friends of mine, you know, offline where they're like, how are you feeling? And I said, you know, I'm optimistic as usual. Cautiously optimistic, but also it doesn't matter. Like whatever happens, I think there's going to be a big reaction from the country, no matter what. And I don't, you know, of course I want the pro-America, anti-Marxist, anti-communists to take control of positions both in our state and in the country, because I think that's going to be really good for future generations. I think either way, we're in for, you know, we all just have to kind of take care of ourselves, you know, take a deep breath. Almost anything that occurs it's going to be something that passes. In other words, there's going to be a lot of things going on. Some are going to be false flags. Some are going to be meant to look a certain way when it's the opposite. It's going to be easy to get emotionally triggered right now. And I think just for my listeners, you know, they know that I just believe that, you know, we have a lot more unity than we realize. It's just that the Marxist Luciferians control the media and they have a big presence in social media and things like TikTok. So they're blaring out a lot of things to confuse people and make us feel like, you know, there's no way we can win, but I feel optimistic, but I'm also tired. I don't know about you.
Oh yeah. Tired is probably my number one descriptor right now. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm more optimistic now than I was a few weeks ago. You know, I mean, with like, we're talking nationally, the presidential campaign, her campaign has been flailing. That's been obvious.
It has been. Yep.
I'm just so, you know what, the best thing that Trump did was expose exactly how deep in the media and so many other actors that even seem to be on our side were all in on the same thing.
Yep.
And how they're all damn swamp creatures.
Yep.
And it's true. And unfortunately, like, that's, we're blessed to have that message out. Unfortunately, the vessel of that message breeds such almost like an immune response from people, like an antiviral response from people. Like they get possessed by something when he is the vessel of that message. But it's true. Project Mockingbird, we know that's true. Like all of that, these are all facts. I wish, you know, Trump is a bull in a china shop, you know, but what I like to think is he's our bull in their china shop, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I'm totally fine with letting him go mess shit up, you know?
Totally.
And it's just nuts to me that for the left has been speaking about for decades about the corruption and the endless wars and the Wall Street and Big Pharma and all of that. And I said this at this debate that I did for Walkaway a couple of years ago in Seattle, University of Washington, Seattle. It was a left versus right debate. And they asked us who has a bigger problem with extremism, the left or the right? And I said, well, the beginning part of my answer was there's extremism on both sides, clearly, and nobody wants that. But if you have some historical literacy, you know that the extreme right is reactionaries. They are always a reaction to the extreme left. Fascism came out of a response to communism. Mm. Nazism came out of a response from Marxism. So if you want to kill two evil birds with one stone, take out Marxism first.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The Marxists won World War II. There's not a whole lot to celebrate there. No, it wasn't. They're good guys won for sure on our side in a sense. But no, because we all acknowledge how evil fascism and Nazism is. Why don't we educate our kids about how evil communism is? That's when it tells you who actually won the war, because they have infiltrated every institution. So Kamala is an extension of that to such a degree. Her, you know, father was a Marxist professor, but beyond that, she is an empty vessel. She will go wherever the political winds blow. She has become so much, she has claimed to be so much more moderate now in the last few months. Oh my God, she supports a border wall. Her only problem with the border wall is that Trump didn't build it fast enough, apparently, is what she's saying now. She's, Mrs. Prosecutor, going to go after all the crimes, all of this. It's blatant lies. You can look at her record. But they're so comfortable spewing that because there's an entire institution and infrastructure around her to prop that up, from social media accounts to the mainstream media to all of these influencers that are paid to spew all this garbage. They were paid $10,000 a pop to attend the DNC. Are you joking me?
Yeah.
And like, and honestly, they're doing the right thing because they're gaining influence on young people. Like politically, they're doing the right thing. That's what the right should be doing more of, is trying to get more of their message out through young people, supporting more people on social media, because that's where the war is like really fought. That is like the front lines.
That's Charlie. So, that's Charlie Kirk doing that. I mean, he's like the only one though, right? There needs to be a whole bunch of people like that. You mentioned Bull in the China Shop.
What about
the
RNC?
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you mentioned
the Bull in the China Shop, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. And then I've said on the show, I said, you know, the left is still trying to work out their unresolved daddy issues with Donald Trump, right? It's still just like, you know, dad is like saying, dad puts out mean tweets, dad does this. You know, it's just like, it's just unresolved shadow work that the left has not completed, which is explains their hysterical triggering. He just triggers the shit out of the left. And for me, you know, it's a little amusing at times when I'm like, look at how triggered they are by this guy. They can't see straight. We're talking about building a bridge and unity and stuff like that. But our guy, our wrecking ball, they just cannot see straight. He is going to lock them all up in jail, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, some people might get locked up. It's not going to be the people opposing Trump. It's going to be the people breaking the law in election treason and pedophiles that are doing harmful things to children. If you're none of those things, I think you're going to be fine if Trump wins the election, you know. But it's like, they're like, nope, he's coming for me. I'm like, well, what have you done that would have him come for you? Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, it's like yelling, "Hey, creep," into a crowd, and a person turns around and says, "Hey, don't call me a creep." It's like, exactly. Wait, why are you responding to that?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Like, it's not what you're called. It's what you responded to. It's what you respond to, you know?
And if we're honest, you know, some of the celebrities that are going, "I'm going to end up in jail," they have done creepy shit with kids. So they're being honest. When Bill Maher's going, "I think I'm going to jail. I'm going away." It's like, yeah, you probably are. I know you're on some list and you've been to P. Diddy parties and at the Playboy Mansion on, you know, 80 occasions. I'm sure they have stuff. I heard they have tape on you doing some weird shit, dude. But anyways, I wanted to ask you specifically about Brian Haywood. You know, we have these initiatives in Washington. For the listeners that aren't in Washington, we have these initiatives that are put out. And I know you're doing work for Let's Go Washington. And I just got some text messages a couple days ago with people that are getting their voters pamphlet. And they're like, "I think it's yes on all these, right?" And I said, exactly right. So where can people go to find out? Do you have one that you're like, I know you have, there's Stop the Gas Ban, there's Repeal the Capital Gains Tax. I love all these, by the way. Stop the Hidden Gas Tax and Give Workers a Choice, which is opting out of state-run long-term care coverage act, which they tried to put me on that automatically. I had like 1 week to opt out of it off of my paycheck. Otherwise they said, if you don't opt out in this 1 week period, then we're forever going to take it out of your paycheck. And I'm like, no. So I opted out, but there's a ton of people that probably missed that. And now they're just their wages are being garnered. You don't know if you're going to live here the rest of your life. If you're going to take it, you know, they're taxing you like you're going to be, like you're paying into a system where you're going to be in assisted living or something. But you know, they don't give you an option to say, yeah, I would like that taken out of my paycheck.
Right.
Anyway,
that's that one also, it's pretty anti-woman to the time period and time frames. It doesn't leave out a good cutout for women that need to take off time for their children, for their first pregnancy, or for taking care of elderly people. It doesn't leave cutouts for people that are disabled. So, and that can't meet the hour requirements, and they're still getting their wages lowered by our government for a benefit they're not going to be able to use. So yeah, that one is important. I would say the ones that stick out to me for sure are the gas tax, because that affects so many people, and the marketing for the Yes campaign has been so dishonest, but surprise, surprise, they are now calling it a billionaire tax break to repeal the hidden gas tax. They're calling it a billionaire tax break, and which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, considering it's the most regressive tax in our state's history, because it hurts the poor, middle class, and working families the most. People use their cars for work. I was just talking to an Uber driver yesterday who drives on average 200 miles a day. Okay, and she was shocked and amazed at our gas station event when we had lowered the price of gas to the national average to reflect what it would look like closer to without the Climate Commitment Act's hidden gas tax. And she did not know a thing about this, and I don't judge her for it whatsoever. This hasn't all of these a lot. The natural gas ban was passed on the last day of legislation, of the legislation period, on the last day at 2 a.m. At 2 a.m., they passed the natural gas ban. Classic. So they do not want any clarity or any sunlight being shown on this. And now they have a bunch of dark money with very deep pockets, including Bill Gates, who is funding the Yes campaign. And my favorite part about this is that they criticize Brian for being wealthy when his opposition and the Yes campaign are endlessly more wealthy than he is. I mean, this is like by large factors more wealthy than he is. I mean, the Yes campaign was featured on the cover of Forbes. Like, really? Like, it's such a joke when you're trying to castigate a person who invested so much of their own money, a large portion of their money into initiatives that are hugely popular, by the way. We've already passed, what is it, 3 into law? Police pursuit we got passed into law on a bipartisan level earlier this year. Yeah. And we also had the parental notification, the parental bill of rights passed on a bipartisan level, which the Democrats opposed HB 5589, I believe, in the beginning. But once they realized how popular it is and how unpopular it is to attack parents of children, then they reversed course and it passed almost unanimously, I want to say. So we've already accomplished things that have benefited the state. And even the Seattle Times endorses 2 of our initiatives out of 4. So people see the value there. It's a bipartisan thing. 50% of Democrats and independents support our initiative. So it is a bipartisan thing. It is not a right-wing thing whatsoever. The ones that stick out to me the most, like I said, is the capital gains tax, especially because we're not even tracking our carbon output. Inslee closed down the site that tracked his carbon output for these programs specifically because he wasn't able to meet any of his goals. So what'd he do? He didn't change strategies, didn't change direction. He just stopped tracking the numbers. So we've taken millions and millions and millions and millions from Washington State drivers, and we can't even show anything that we've done positive for it.
Hey, so I want to make sure I don't have this backwards. So am I voting yes to stop?
You're voting yes. Yes, on all 4.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
And unfortunately, our attorney general, who's responsible for writing out these, you know, the ballots, he is in strong opposition to these initiatives, which seems like a huge conflict of interest. And he made the statements on the ballots as complicated and opaque as possible.
Sure.
So, like you said, I've been getting dozens of calls, comments, emails asking, is it still yes? I'm not sure. This lady had a full page of notes at the last place I spoke at. And she came to me and she said, okay, so it's yes on these 2 and no on these 2. And I was like, no, it's yes on all 4. Like, it is crazy. It is crazy. And these are people that are like well-versed in politics. These are like PCOs and people that, you know, go to all these events and know about voting and stuff. And it's still confusing to them because it's intended to be confusing.
Yeah, it's intended to be confusing. And if you get lawyers, they can make yes and no look awfully close together. If they can language things in an opaque way, like you said, to where you're like, I don't know who would know this. Let me text David and make sure I'm not screwing this vote up, you know?
Yeah.
I would think.
And that's, the capital gains one is also very important. And that absolutely. One seems like a, like, oh, that's just like a cutout for rich people or something. Not at all. They already have legislation on the books that they want to pass to lower the threshold from $400,000 to $15,000 of capital gains. Wow. And guess what? The cool thing about really rich people and billionaires and 100 millionaires, they can move. They can change their voting address and right. their tax address pretty damn easily, just like Jeff Bezos did months or within months after the capital gains went into effect in Washington State. He said he moved to Florida for family. That is a bunch of bullshit. Yeah. He moved there so he would lose
taxes,
millions and millions of his dollars.
Well, I would think these would pass, like you said, because it's bipartisan, but also people are stressed out because frickin' blueberries are $16 right now. Like gas is super expensive. Like people, middle-class people are really stressed. And I think that, you know, any break this election cycle right now, people are going to be grabbing it. Just please don't include more taxes on all this, on my lifestyle, on the stuff I'm going to be doing. But, you know, the left is really good at making upside down statements and making, you know, up look down and vice versa. So we'll see. I hope the word's out enough. But David, I just want to thank you so much for coming on to Base Camp for Men and sharing your insight and your wisdom. Super great to chat with you. I just love what you're doing. Keep up all the great work and let's keep in touch. And I just hope we have a big celebration. We'll have you over to the house once this all shakes out, because I have a feeling there'll be a lot of good news, I hope.
Yeah, me too. This was awesome. Thank you, Tony. And this, you had some of like the best questions I've been asked on a podcast. So this was great. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks, David.
All right, ciao. I'll talk soon.
I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Hey, Base Campers, we've got the holidays coming up, and if you want to get something patriotic and pro-America for your friends and loved ones, go to www.standupnowapparel.com. Use the code BASECAMP to receive 10% off plus free shipping. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.